This is the Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency with information for IT professionals. For more information and to download other shows, visit ciaops.podbean.com. This is episode 27 with Tim Barrett and is brought to you by the Computer Information Agency. Visit us on the web at www.ciaops.com. Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency. My name is Robert Crane, and for this episode, I'm joined by Tim Barrett. Tim, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
No problems. As we always do here on the Need to Know podcast, what I'll do is I'll just get Tim to firstly introduce himself and let all the listeners know who he is and basically what he's doing. Tim.
Hey, well, like you said, my name's Tim Barrett. I'm in Louisville, Kentucky, USA, and I've got a big affinity for a small business server, all the products in that stack. I've been an SBS MVP for 5 years. Been running an SBS user group here in Kentucky for, it'll be 8 years this month. We'll have our 100th meeting this summer. I've got a website, nogeekleftbehind.com, which talks about SBS and related products. Run a fairly irregular comic strip on that website, and just really excited about all the technology in the SBS space.
So I think that probably where we'll start today is Tim's been pretty heavily involved in the MVP tour, obviously organized mainly, I suppose, with Jeff Milton. That's come to certainly a lot of places around the world, including down under here in Australia and also through the US. You're involved in that, Tim. Give us some idea as to, you know, what was the aim of doing it, something like that?
Well, I know in the past we've had two tours come through funded by Microsoft. One was for SBS 2003 R2. It was a partner tour. And I think that was 2005 time frame. And then the end of 2006, there was another tour. So there was some groundwork laid as far as that format. But it was presented by Microsoft, and basically the user groups just created the venue and the opportunity, and Microsoft picked up the rest. This was different because the presenters were not Microsoft employees. They were different MVPs, not just SBS MVPs. I think there was some virtualization and some other specialties, but they traveled to the different cities and got to show what they're using in their practices. So it was more real-world experience, less of the sales and marketing side, and pretty heavy content on this is, you know, what works for us, and a lot of Q&A too.
So, you know, did you find the ones that you ran were the, you know, well attended? Were the, you know, were the people interested in the products that were being presented and the information that was being given?
It was a lot of really good feedback from the attendees. So even during the lunch breaks, everybody just had a lot of questions. It was not a, you know, bunch of baby birds with their mouths open, just, you know, feed me some content and throw prizes at me. And that was really different between this and some of the other events, is this was not swag given, directed. You know, there wasn't a lot of, you know, big marketing push with it. It was all about the practical knowledge. So the feedback we got was overwhelming. It was very positive because I think it was very actionable by the partners. It's, you know, exactly what they needed to know to be able to, you know, get up to speed with some of the new products.
So what technologies was being showcased?
It was a Small Business Server 2011. Essentials, Windows Storage Server Essentials 2008 R2, and Windows Multipoint Server 2011 were the three key components on that tour.
And I think probably the product that a lot of people probably had never seen or hadn't any experience with is obviously the Multipoint Server. We have mentioned this before in another podcast, but again, can you give us your spin on, you know, what the multi-point server actually is?
Well, multi-point server, I think what it accomplishes is very similar to what SBS did when it was first born, which is it takes a set of technologies and it brings them to where people that haven't had the in-depth experience of deploying them can manage it. So it's designed to be easy to install, remote desktop services, basically, in a box. But you can install it and not have any problems. The type of hardware you need is very flexible. The fact that it was born, this is the second iteration. There was a 2010 version of MultiPoint, and we're up to 2011 now. And it's designed to where someone, even a school teacher, for example, could be able to install this or unbox a product. I know HP's got one that's pre-made. You unbox it, run a wizard, and you can configure it in different ways with different clients with minimal IT support. So the first version was academic only, and the second version that came out, the 2011 one, is academic and business both. So with that design constraint of easy to use, easy to deploy, easy to work on, I think they've really lowered the bar as far as getting up to speed with what's required to use it in a business environment.
Do you think that there's the demand for that sort of product out there amongst the customers? I mean, are they looking for this sort of product?
I definitely think they are, because in our market in the US, when the economy took a nosedive, everybody stopped buying computers. They went from a standard refresh cycle in the small business world to a let's just fix it as it breaks, or replace it if we have to. So we have lots and lots of clients that have aging Windows XP machines that really need to be replaced bad. They've got full hard drives. They're just, the operating system is so old. But a big problem with small businesses is there's no standardization typically. In an enterprise, they might buy, a whole building worth of computers at one time. They all have the same operating system, have the same patches, same applications. They're, locked down with group policy, and you go to one computer and it's just like any other. But in small business, they might buy five computers this year and, seven computers the next year, and you end up with this, mixed match of different types of configurations. And therefore, when someone says, "Oh, we've got a new employee," you've got to install, all their line of business applications and, tweak it the way they want it, add all their printers. But with MultiPoint, you can take those old computers and either reuse them with like an RDP icon on the desktop to connect to MultiPoint, or you can use open source product like ThinStation, or you can just replace the hardware altogether with a thin client or a zero client. So that way they're going from old hardware to new hardware, new operating system, new version of Office, and it's the feedback we've gotten has been extremely positive.
And is it a solution that requires an SPS server?
It does not, but it plays well with SBS. As a matter of fact, if you install it in an SBS Essentials network, which has the built-in backup capability, the MultiPoint box can be backed up by the Essentials server. So you don't have to buy additional server backup software for that in an SBS environment.
Okay, so from the point of view of the functionality, I mean, what does MultiPoint give you that's different from, obviously a normal workstation, or even something like terminal service? Is it comparable between those two sort of technologies?
I'd say it compares very well with terminal services, same technology under the hood. What it gives you that I don't think you get, and some companies may or may not like this, is the dashboard for controlling it. So the dashboard is very similar to what you would see in a home server or a current small business server. So as far as managing the users, managing the workstations, looking at the connections, that dashboard is something that not going to find in the standard product. But also, there's some of those features that they put in for the academic environment are still there. So you can get a screen which shows you a thumbnail view of every computer connection on that machine. So in a classroom environment, the teacher can't walk around, behind all the students and see what they're doing. And so they built that into the console where you can get that thumbnail. So some businesses may not like that, or it may not be appropriate if there are confidentiality issues with like healthcare, for example. But I think it has a lot of application in call centers, in training rooms where you're doing presentations or employee training, customer service areas. It gives you a simple view, and it can do things like if you're the instructor, you're the person in the front of the room, you can project your screen onto other people's screens, Or you can take an example where you say, well, see where this, you know, where Johnny here, he got stuck, he had a problem. You can show other people what that is. So that's kind of the secret sauce there that you don't get with the standard product.
So what sort of hardware, what sort of grunt do you need to run it typically for a 5-person multi-point situation?
A lot of it depends on the applications. And the applications are kind of the crux of the whole thing. If you're just using standard information workers, Office 2010 and doing some basic internet browsing, you can get away with a single quad core and, 8 to 12 gigs of RAM pretty easily. As the applications become more graphics intensive, the hardware needs to step up too. So for example, we have a demo multi-point box that we take to client sites and we deploy it temporarily. We will join it to their domain and let them try out specifically their applications because the applications are always the make or break. You may have, one application that you try to install it and it doesn't want to be installed on the server. It's hard coded for, XP or Windows 7, for example. So by trying the applications and seeing, how does it work? Is the performance okay? So unlike a traditional server, you're typically putting a very nice graphics card in here. We like, the NVIDIAs and the ATIs, something with at least 512 megs of RAM, probably closer to a gig. And like I said, whatever applications, if they're doing PowerPoint and occasionally in PowerPoint 2010, you might trim a video or something, you are going to benefit from a better graphics card. But most of the time, and anything that's graphics intensive, like AutoCAD, you're not going to want to put on this environment. Disk-wise, on our demo machine, we're using SSD as the host OS, and we're redirecting all of the documents to the small business server, so that we're keeping a very low footprint on the network. But just your standard servers, I think the HP's got one. They're multi-seat machine. That it comes out of the box with a 500 gig hard drive, 8 gigs of RAM, and a Core i7. So nothing killer. You're probably looking at about 15 users for something like that. And multi-point, the professional edition, it maxes out at 20. So that's why you don't need these huge boxes with, multi-quad core processors, because you're only going to have 20 up to 20 users per instance anyway.
And I assume that you can put multiple multi-point servers into a network.
You can, and you can actually you get the benefit of the 1+1 licensing with multi-point. So you could use it as the host OS and as the guest OS as well, and still be licensed. You could not have users connect to the host and to the guest. You'd have to buy one copy of multi-point for each guest OS. What you would lose when you virtualize that, though, is there's a variety of different types of clients you can connect up to it, RDP clients, wirelessly connect an iPad, for example. But any of the direct connect clients, like a Xero client that uses USB, you're going to lose that capability when you go to a virtualized multipoint.
And I suppose the other question is how's the licensing work? I mean, obviously you've got, the host system, you put multi-point and there's a license for that. But each machine, let's say running Windows 7, do I need a Windows 7 OS license for that?
The way the licensing is handled is you need a server cal and you need a multi-point cal. So in an SBS environment, because this is a member server, you don't need the server portion of that cal. You would only need the multipoint for each user. So if you had 10 users registered on your SBS or 15, for example, you would only need 15 multipoint cals on the multipoint box. You wouldn't need 15 server and 15 multipoint. To further complicate things, some thin clients, like some of the HP, like the T200s, for example, some of them come with the cal built into the device. They'll have the little COA sticker on it. So in that case, you wouldn't need any additional licensing. It just depends on what type of client you've got on there.
And actually running up the box, running up the multi-point server, how is it compared to something like SBS? Is it a, wizard blowing thing, or is it pretty easy to install? You would assume so, coming from an education background, but is it relatively easy to get up and running?
You could probably kill a fifth of vodka and still get multipoint installed without any help. It runs two wizards. Basically, the first one lays down the operating system and does the normal Server 2008 reboots, and then once that's done, it runs a wizard which does the multipoint part of it, and when it's done, you're connected and ready to go.
Okay. So, we can obviously run this in environment. We can run this, in a relatively small business. I mean, how do we connect everything up with, USB cables? How do the screens, the monitors connect? I mean, obviously you've got thin clients which you can just connect to the network, but can we do, ordinary monitors and keyboards?
We can. So if we start with the academic and kind of work out from there, when it was originally designed, maybe you would have a round desk in a classroom and have the computer sitting in the middle of it, and then you would direct connect keyboards, mice, and monitors to that. So in that case, you'll see, and there's some really good videos that the Multipoint team has put on YouTube of different configurations. So in that environment, the classroom or the training environment, you would have a multi-headed video card, either dual-headed video card or multiple dual-headed video cards with the monitors plugged directly in. And then for each keyboard and mouse, you would plug those into a USB hub. And so when you turn the monitor on, let's say it's monitor number two, it says press a certain key on the keyboard, and like the letter B. And when you press that, then Multipoint is remembering, okay, this keyboard is connected with this screen. So that's number one, which is direct connect. Number two, suppose one of those monitors quits, blows a capacitor and it's gone. In that instance, what you can do is take one of the screens, as these are wide screens, and you can split it in half. And so the left half of the screen is one user, the right half of the screen is another user. So again, probably a classroom environment, but you could possibly use that in training environment too. So the next step after Direct Connect is you can have little USB stations. So it's a USB cable coming out of the back of the Multipoint machine, connects into a box, and on that box there's another USB for mouse, another USB for keyboard, and a VGA connected directly. So in that instance, that little box, that zero client, is handling the video for you. You don't have to have a multi-headed video card. And then from there, the next step is traditional, not zero clients, but thin clients. We've got some demo ones from Wyze. I know N Computing's got some. There's all kinds of different thin clients out there that you can use. And then the step beyond that is an RDP icon on an existing PC. So when we're doing the pilot programs to test application compatibility, we will create an RDP icon and drop it on the desktops of the existing machines on the network. And what that lets users do, they can double-click that icon, put in their credentials, and then they have all the updated applications, their documents and everything are redirected automatically. And if they're not satisfied with the performance or there's some type of compatibility issue, they can just, click X, close the RDP session, and they're back in their old computer, just as they were before.
Okay, so to the end user, the look and feel is obviously, just like a workstation. Are there any limitations? Are there things that that aren't possible with the multi-point server clients?
Yeah, and it's typically application compatibility. For example, I'll pick on Google Earth. Google Earth works great for the first user that logs into the machine. When the second user tries to launch Google Earth, it produces a weird error. So applications like that that weren't designed for multiple users, you'll see all kinds of weird types of errors, and that's the things you need to ferret out before you deploy it in production. And actually, on the Multipoint forums on the TechNet site, there's a link to a community website which people list remote desktop applications. Do they work? Do they install cleanly? Are there workarounds? Are there problems? Another good example, not just to pick on Google, but even pick on Microsoft a little bit, Windows Live Meeting. When you run Windows Live Meeting across an RDP session, you lose that the voice over IP. So if you look at that application, say, well, it's a Microsoft product, it should just work with other Microsoft products. Unfortunately, that's not always the case. So due diligence is especially important. So we use a program called SIW, which is system information for Windows. And it just, we walk around with a little USB flash drive and we take an inventory of all the programs on the machines and then come back and compile that and say, okay, you know, which of these applications do we still need to test? And then we can install them on multipoint and see if it works or not.
Okay, so, you know, it looks very similar, but, you know, from a reseller's point of view, is it something that I can virtualize? Can I run, you know, multi-point server on a Hyper-V, you know, box?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The only thing you're going to lose with Hyper-V that you would get on bare metal is those direct connected clients. So if you don't, if everybody's going to be connected with a NIC or wirelessly, and I would say if you're doing wireless, you definitely want N wireless if you can, just because you start pumping video back and forth across that wireless, it's going to slow down. But I think your saturation is probably going to be about 3 multipoint machines per Hyper-V host. If you get over that, you're kind of putting all your eggs in one basket, having at that point, you know, as many as 60 users on one machine. It might see some performance issues there. Or if you have a hardware issue, once you get over probably, I'd say when you're in the 60 user range, you probably want to look at adding a second box.
Okay, so we can hypervise it, we can do all that sort of stuff. Does it, you know, is it, if I put it into an SBS network and I need to update it, will, you know, WSUS recognize it and update it and do all that sort of stuff?
That's a good question. I've never tried to update it with WSUS because on a managed service environment, we typically patch with other tools. I know that when you connect it to the SBS network, you can have it show up in remote web workplace or what's, you know, remote web access now. So if the clients are remoting in from home, that multipoint box can be one of the machines that they can connect to. But as far as WSUS integration, not 100%.
Okay. So, how do you know? It's not a product you see everywhere. Is it a pure OEM product? Can I, you know, buy it off the shelf and put it on my own white box if I want?
You can indeed. That's one of the beauties of it, is that you can test it out. They've got some trial versions too, so you can see, you know, download it, see how it works. But you're not tied to one particular hardware manufacturer. You can just buy the software and spin it up in a VM and kick the tires on it.
Okay, so it seems as though it's you know, a pretty you know, a new product, something that hasn't been out and can, you know, fill a role for a lot of businesses, like you said, who are probably looking to not necessarily replace their hardware. I mean, what was the general response to the product from the people there when you were at the tour? Was it something that they'd say, look, you know, we get this, we understand this, or is it something they're a bit, oh, I don't understand this, I need to do more research? I mean, was there that direct connection between, look, I could effectively go out and start selling this tomorrow?
That's almost verbatim what we heard. We heard people saying, this is, you know, I've got people I can sell this to right now. I didn't even know this product existed. And, you know, if I'd known about it, you know, 2 weeks ago, I would have quoted something differently. I think that the fact that it's applicable in their business environments was a big takeaway, and also just the ease of deployment. It's deceptively easy to deploy because you think once you've got it installed, then you're ready to go. But it's all that application compatibility testing that as you roll out, you know, your first one, your second one, your third one, you start to gain this experience of, you know, what type of thin client? Because that's the biggest questions we had, is what kind of video card, what kind of thin clients, you know, what are you using? Are you doing RAID? How are you backing it up? It's like, once you understand this will work, then it becomes an issue of finding out what are the best practices. And that's really going to vary depending on, you know, budgets and environments.
I suppose to you know, to look perhaps on the, maybe not the negative, but on the other side. I mean, it's a fairly new product. It's been typically aimed at the education market, you know, and maybe Microsoft's pushing it into the small business market to an extent. I mean, do you really feel that it's a product that is going to continue to grow and enhance, or is it just, you know, a bit of a stopgap measure for people who can't, you know, or can't afford terminal server, do you think?
I don't think it's... I don't consider it a second-class product, at all. And I think a lot of people are used to that old mantra of, it takes Microsoft three tries to get anything right. So they always, wait for Internet Explorer 3 or, whatever the first service pack is. And I don't see that at all with this product. It's when the 2010 version came out, everybody was in the business space who had seen it was frustrated because it was only licensed for academic. And I think that that's kind of where they were targeting it was emerging markets, especially Africa, for example, where, extremely tight budgets. And I had a chance to meet with some of the folks on the Multipoint team when I was in Seattle last week, and they, shared some experiences and some success stories. And I think there's actually they just did a case study in the Czech Republic. So a lot of the marketing material that you saw around the first generation was school, and businesses would see that and they go, oh, that's not us. And if you don't like that dashboard view where you see the other, what the other users are doing, you really don't have to use it. But I think there's still a little bit of academic left over in the pricing. So when you're searching for part numbers for the hardware itself or for the thin clients, you're always seeing that little bit of academic left over there because it is still heavily used in that environment. But for businesses, I don't see this being any problem at all. It's not a stopgap or, some kludge. I think it's a first-class product.
And you feel that it's easy enough for, the someone who's doing SBS and understands all that sort of stuff to get into Multipoint, get it up and running, and be able to deploy and support it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the forums are the responses on the TechNet site are pretty light with the questions. And I think that is not based on adoption. I think it's based on just ease of use. It works out of the box very easily. And the questions we see in the forums are things like, so some network latency issues or pricing configuration, thin clients, things like that.
Okay, so obviously it's a product that seems to fit well in there, and is it fair to classify it as a cut down terminal server?
Based on the fact that you're limited to a max of 20 users, I think you could say it's cut down in that way. It's and we're used to seeing that in the SMB space where there are limits on the product, maximum number of users, but performance-wise, it's just as if you were to just put regular terminal server side by side with it, you're not going to see a performance difference.
Okay, so have you deployed some of these in your environments?
We do, and actually, I'm thinking about switching my daughters at home to Multipoint 2, but they're not really keen on that. They like having their own machines, but I've got it running at home. We've got it running at the office. We've got some test environments out there, so we're getting a lot of feedback from it. And I'd say, again, not to harp on the application compatibility, but other than that, the feedback is extremely positive.
And so the application compatibility, I mean, what do you need to look for? What sort of things are going to trip you up? Is do you need to, run up your own multipoint server and test the application those clients are going to run, or is there some, key giveaway that'll indicate that there may be issues?
The sites on the internet will tell you, what applications will and won't work out of the box. Our focus is on, I'll tell you a good example. There's an accounting package, I think it's accounting, it's called Timberline. And some of these packages will have a USB dongle that you have to plug into the machine for copy protection. So that way they can make sure it's not being, duplicated or given away. So there's considerations like that. Is there some physical device that if it was a VM, it would have to see? But also, everybody's got these weird little programs that have been around forever that, and not just normal things like, iTunes syncing up your iPhone, but some of the oddball applications that you've never even heard of before, and you'll get into the deployment, and then you'll find out, oh, well, there's this thing we only use once a quarter or once a year, and that's why where that inventory helps us. That's kind of a due diligence thing, and so what we do is we've got there's a service called SurveyMonkey, where once we've done the demo and the trial, we can send that out to the users, and it's very short, but it's subjective, it's anonymous. And we want to see, how is this performance? How would you rate it versus your old machine? Did you have any printing problems? Did you have any application issues? Were you satisfied with, you know, the speed of the video, the audio, the screen refreshes, things like that? And then we can hand those metrics back to the business owner and say, look, this is the quote that we're proposing, and on the trial, this is what we saw. So we're investing probably about 8 hours of time that we're not billing on the pilot, you know, per customer. And because it's that important to us to get that application compatibility on the front end.
Okay, so you know, if you're a reseller and maybe unfortunately you've missed the MVP tour as it rolled through your neighborhood, how can I, you know, get more information? I mean, is there an eval that I can download and play with? As a reseller, how do I get into MultiPoint? What's the best avenues to start?
If you are a small business specialist with Microsoft, and you've got the Action Pack, or even if you're not a small business specialist, if you got the Action Pack or you got TechNet or MSDN, MultiPoint Professional is available in all of those, or you can download the trial. So there's a standard version and a professional version. The standard version only goes up to 10 users, and you cannot domain join it. The professional edition goes up to 20 users, and you can domain join it. So that's obviously what we're going to tell everybody to do. If you're in an academic environment and you sell to schools and colleges, they're probably going to buy the software directly, even cheaper than you can, and you're just going to provide the hardware and the support services to install it. But you also get some CALs with the Action Pack as well, so that way you can actually try it. Just like with a regular remote desktop server, you're not going to be able to install the retail version of Office on this. You're going to need a volume license version of Office, just like you would with any terminal server.
Okay, so I mean, obviously, I can get it, I can run it up. But if I get stuck or need support, where do I hang out basically to find the MultiPoint gurus?
There's a site, social.technet.microsoft.com. That's where you get to the forums. And there's a Windows MultiPoint Server forum, so, and that's manned by the MVPs. I think at this point there's only I met one MultiPoint Server MVP in Seattle, and I think he's the only one. I think he's the guy in the Czech Republic. But because this fits so well into the SBS space, you'll see a lot of SBS MVPs that hang out and answer questions on that forum as well. And so in addition, that's the public forum. And if you're a partner, there's the Microsoft Partner Forum too, where you might get a quicker response time on that if it's a partner-specific issue.
Okay, so I mean, is it, you know, from your experience and, you know, obviously traveling around with the tour and you know, coming across the average, if there is an average SBS reseller, is it something these guys really should be looking at? Should they, you know, invest the time and you know, even have a look at it so they understand what it is?
I think they should, especially if you've got a client who just rolled out all new PCs, then it's not even worth the discussion. If you've got a client who they really need PCs, or they have a lot of turnover, their PCs are very old. From all the numbers we've heard kicked around in the industry and magazines and discussions, most SBS networks out there are around 15 users. You know, obviously some above, some below. And it's going to depend on geography. But if you've got 15 users and at least half of them are on old PCs, for us, we've run the numbers on the hardware, the software, reusing the PCs, for example, and the different configurations. And the tipping point tends to be at about 8 users. If you are doing more than 8 users, it is less expensive to do multi-point and reuse the existing PCs for the time being as thin clients than it is to buy all new PCs with all new Office, because you're still going to be paying for Office for your new PCs, and you're still going to pay for the operating system, and you're probably already going to have your CAL on your SBS box. So that's just kind of our, you know, if you're 3 users, you're like, no, there's no sense doing multi-point. If you're 8 and above, it's definitely worth considering.
Okay, so we've obviously covered multipoint pretty much in depth, and obviously that's not the only the product or the only technology that the MVP tour was covering. What sort of was the second most or the next most item that drew the biggest interest, do you think, from that tour?
Probably a Small Business Server 2011 Essentials. It's kind of a specific product. I'll give you an example. We talked about how when the economy went bad, a lot of customers stopped buying new PCs. They also stopped buying servers. So we have servers clients, especially in the construction industry, when the construction slowed down, they downsized. They let employees go. They just kept a key staff, and they held onto their PCs and their servers. So there are a lot of SBS 2003 servers out there still running, on unfortunately sometimes very old hardware that are going to fall over pretty soon. And you come to them and say, well, here's SBS 2011 standard, and here's your RAID 5, and your this and your that, and your Exchange, and here's your managed services agreement to monitor Exchange and everything every day, and they can't swallow that pill. So if they're a new company just starting out, or if they are a company that's been around this downsized, that Small Business Server Essentials with that 25 users, they don't have to buy any additional CALs, so they're getting the new technology on the server side without having to fork out any additional CAL pricing. But also they're losing a lot of complication. One of my favorite features in SBS has always been SharePoint. And it's just been the one thing that really never, I don't think, got enough attention in the SBS market, because the partners just aren't really that comfortable with it. And once they've seen it and they've used it, then they say, oh, okay, well, now we'll start using it internally. And now we know how to sell it to our customers, because what worked for us might work for them. I mean, in an ideal world, that happens a lot, but realistically, partners just don't use SharePoint very much. So the SharePoint's not in it, the WSS is not in it, the Exchange is not in it. So those guys can go to Office 365 or some other hosted Exchange, or third product party product like Carrio, or we've even seen people go back to POP and just said, we need basic email. We don't want, all this collaboration. We're a, we're a welding company. That's all we need. Most of our employees are in the field. So the fact that you lose some of that complication and that overhead with Exchange and SharePoint, but what you pick up in exchange for that is the client backup. So those PCs that are admittedly still old, at least that way they're getting backed up. And if one of them falls over and, the hard drive crashes, they've still got all the data.
So obviously the comparison is that, SB Essentials is a bit of a toy. It really, doesn't, if you take out Exchange, you take out SharePoint, it doesn't have a lot of functionality. I mean, what function does it perform in a network? I mean, what's the major reason for keeping SBS Essentials in a network rather than just going to a SAN or just a share on one of the workstations? Why do you want to keep the server, do you think?
Well, if you were selling this to a new customer who was on a work group instead of a domain, you're bringing in the domain aspect of it, but you're also adding the backup. You're also adding remote web access. So for those branch office workers who, or it's a snow day or bad weather or maternity leave, someone can still get in and do work on the PC that way, that you're not going to get with just a NAS box sitting somewhere on the network. So you get the control that you would like to have from a domain, but you also get some of that remote access goodness.
Okay, and was that something that was well adopted? Did people already know about it? Were they implementing it, or were they sort of an eye open to say, well, yeah, I haven't seen this product or given it the time of day, and I should? I mean, what was the reaction to that?
I think everybody had heard of it, and they said, oh, yeah, that's the SBS without Exchange, and that was kind of their familiarity with it, their identification of it. The people that are selling it, I think they're selling it with Office 365 a lot. Again, it depends on the market. Some of the cities that I saw, Office 365 is still seen as kind of a new and untrusted. There's a lot of distrust in the cloud that we see. Distrust with your data, distrust with you know, what happens in a disaster, because in Redmond, everybody thinks that everywhere has great bandwidth. And, you know, I'm in Kentucky, and last Friday we just had tornadoes come through here, which is pretty odd, you know, this time of year, and just wiped out one complete town. We get a lot of weather-related issues, ice storms. We've even had, as far up as well, we've had winds from hurricanes. When we had the SBS tour come through Louisville in January, 2 days before the tour, a tornado had come through and missed the building we were presenting at by about 500 yards. So where in other parts of the country, maybe other parts of the world, you might have really good bandwidth and everybody loves the cloud and trusts it, and, you know, fat pipes everywhere. We've got a lot of people that only have, you know, maybe a T1 at best, just because of geography. So, and there's also kind of an age difference. We see people that are, I don't want to pick a particular age, but you'd say, you know, 20s and younger, that just kind of grew up with the cloud and they're used to it. And you've got ones that are older that have been around that they've seen a lot of, you know, disasters and ice storms and snowstorms and, you know, whatever. And they just, they want their data. And also environmentally wise or financially, we see a lot of customers that are really evaluating what their monthly expenditure is. And some customers would just rather own the equipment and have it on site like an Exchange server. Others, they don't mind paying that monthly fee every month for every employee.
Well, I think that was sort of the point I was going to go to that you have covered. I mean, SBS Essentials to an extent is I suppose, seen as one part of a component linked to typically Office 365. And, you know, I don't know what the experience is for yourself, but the most resellers that I suppose I've seen or talked to down here basically, again, have that hesitancy to go to the cloud, don't trust Office 365, rightly or wrongly, you know, perhaps haven't adopted the product or haven't got into it. So again, they're not going to feel comfortable selling the product, and therefore that also means they're not comfortable selling the SBS Essentials product. They'd rather do the full on site installation of SBS Standard. Is that, do you think, going to be a limiting factor? I mean, really, should they be saying, look, you know, Office 365, nothing to be particularly afraid of, bit of a different technology, you know, like MultiPoint, I can skill myself up on it and sell it? I mean, is that, you know, a factor, are you finding?
I think the learning curve on Essentials is very, very small, especially if you've had any exposure at all to Home Server and you know how the backups and how the restores work. Other than that, I mean, you just open it up and like, where's the rest of the stuff? It's not really in there. I don't know how the IT environment is, what the temperature is in Australia, but here you'll find a lot of people in the SMB space that are very anti-cloud. They're very, you know, hey, you're taking away my business. I don't, you know, trust you with my customer data. And that was a lot of the feedback we heard from the tour, is this better not be another cloud party, because that's not what I'm here for. I don't sell a lot of cloud. Bigger customers do. But
you know, I mean, do you see that if you project into the future, do you see that as you know, a limiting factor for these people? I mean, should they be embracing it? I mean, you know, every technology has its you know, teething problems and whatever, but you know, looking down the track, is the message really that, look guys, you know, get over it, that, you know, you really do need to start looking at that in this space? It's not a matter of a complete transition overnight to everything cloud, but is that hesitancy, do you feel, holding, you know, the average reseller back, that they just want to keep doing everything on site?
I'm jaded. I look at it this way. You could do everything that you need in Essentials with an SBS Standard box and a Windows Storage Server Essentials beside that. You could do it in two boxes where you have your on-site Exchange plus SharePoint, WSS, everything else, plus client backup of 25 users in another device. So in a customer functionality standpoint, you could completely ignore Essentials and still take care of your customer. if the customer specifically wants cloud, then yes, you need to be aware of essentials. If you're in a bidding situation and you realize that somebody else may be bidding this customer on a much less expensive small business server and a cloud backup, that needs to be in your scope of vision as well. But as far as if you are not proficient with this and you don't jump on the bandwagon, you're missing out. I don't really see that as a problem. It's a lot of it depends on your clients, and we have a lot of clients. You know, they toss around the term, you know, trusted advisor. It's like having a mechanic. You know, is your mechanic going to try and sell you something that he makes the most profit on, or is he going to try and sell you what you need, you know, to get your vehicle up and running? And if you have that level of trust with your clients, you know, I think it would be wrong to take a five-user company and say, oh, you get, you know, this huge, you know, $10,000 server deployment if that's not what they need. But, you know, what is the average IT company doing? Are they constantly trying to grow? And most of the partners I've talked to over the last 5 or 6 years that are aggressive, they start out saying, oh, we're selling SBS. You get 3 or 4 years down the road, they're like, well, we don't sell SBS anymore. We outgrew it. So if your core is SBS and that's where you want to be, you should know it. If you are moving up and you get to the point where you don't want to talk to users under, you know, 15 or 20 users on the network, you only want to go bigger, you can ignore essentials.
Okay. So as we're sort of drawing towards the end of our time, we is there anything else in the MVP tour that sort of stood out that people, you know, latched onto or that you thought was something that, you know, you wanted to get that message across to people?
The storage server essentials was key. It's like home server, only bigger. You can domain join it. I think there's a stigma attached to it that a lot of people think it's an older product just because of the naming. You know, Windows Storage Server Essentials 2008 R2. They only did that because that's what the storage server, the bigger product, is, and they just had it in the same name. But I think it honestly falls in scope of the SBS family. I think it's kind of of all the products, it's one that, oh, you know, that would be nice. If I wanted to do client backup on an SBS network, yeah, there's something I can add. But they're only available in OEM, which I'll go on record saying I think that's a mistake on Microsoft's part from a licensing standpoint. They should have made it available to the partners to be able to spin it up in a virtual machine if they want versus only having hardware. That said, I know Western Digital and High Reliance, some other providers have boxes available. Boone in Australia, he's got the Boone box, and they have the backup box by Gramps here in the U.S. So we're seeing the boxes show up. They're available. We didn't have those for view on the tour. The tour was primarily sponsored by HP and Microsoft and SBSmigration.com. So those were the products you saw. But I don't know. It's a nice thing. It's a good club to have in your bag. I don't know how often you use it on a day-to-day basis, especially if you've already got SBS Essentials in your network. It's a moot point.
All right. So I think, unfortunately, it's correct in saying that at this point in time, the MVP tour basically is completed and, I suppose, waiting for funding, I think, to run to the next level. Is that correct? If you sort of missed out, you have missed out. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, the first edition of the tour, as it was conceived and produced, is done. It's over, and it would be nice if they do a second round. We don't know. It depends on funding, availability, you know what happens with the Microsoft product offerings. We're very excited to see the possibility, but no news at this time, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think it seems to be something that you know, Microsoft has cut back on. You know, I remember, you know, years ago as a partner, there was always, you know, a quarterly partner get together conference update, you know, where everybody got together and, you know, you were able to talk to your peers and also see the new products. Microsoft seems to have steered away from that sort of environment, and that's why the MVP tour has filled a bit of a gap, and I suppose that's why it's proved to be as popular as it has been. Definitely popular here in Australia, and it ran in many of the capital cities here. So that was a bit rare too. So I think that, you know, seeing someone like Jeff and the local MVPs present these products was a huge, you know, boon for the people here to get, you know, look at the Storage Central Storage Central server, and also look at the multi-point and be able to talk to knowledgeable people about it. So look, I think there's a huge benefit, and I think a lot of people listening who were on the tour and perhaps maybe missed out are now saying, well, you know, geez, I hope they run it again. So fingers crossed that something will again eventuate.
That'd be awesome if they could do it. I know a lot of the MVPs really enjoyed and benefited from talking to the partners, and every time I went to an event, I would come away learning something myself. So it's not like, you know, these are the people that have every answer you've ever asked. There's still that interchange that you know, iron sharpens iron going on, and very beneficial for everybody.
Well, I mean, that's great. And like I said, I think we're reaching the top of our time here. I do want to let you go off and get on with the rest of your day or the evening, as it may be well over there. I'll take this opportunity, obviously, to thank Tim for coming on the show and sharing his knowledge about multipoint and give you some idea about the MVP tour. And just to close it out, Tim, do you want to just, you know, give people a bit of a, you know, any other relevant points that we may have missed, or a quick summary of that, and then just let people know how they can get in contact with you if they need to ask additional questions?
Sure. So the tour, if there ever becomes another one, if you go to spsmigration.com, I know Jeff was spearheading the tour in the first place, so that would be a site to check. Susan Bradley's blog as well. Everybody should know that, spsdiva.com. And my blog, if I see any news, I post it on there as well, the nogeekleftbehind.com. So it's good community. It's, you know, kind of the rising tide rises all ships. So that's what we're trying to do with it, the sharing information. My boss says, you know, why are you training your competitors? But, you know, it's everybody, nobody can know all of it. So we all help each other out.
I think that's one of the differentiators, I suppose, has been that the SBS area has always been community based, and there's a lot of information and you know, as other people who've been on this podcast have mentioned, I think there's a lot of people out there who are willing to help and give you every assistance. It's just a matter of going out there and asking them, whether they're on forums or whether they're in face to face or whether they're in, you know, group meetings. I think there's a, you know, a huge amount of goodwill out there, and people are generally willing to share that information and help their fellow provider, because look, there's just, you know, a huge amount of business and customers out there that do need support, and like you said, you know, raising the quality for everybody benefits, you know, not only the customer but also, you know, the reseller, I believe.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, with that, I'd like to thank Tim very much for his time again, and everybody for listening. This has been another Need to Know podcast. Thank you very much for listening. This podcast has been brought to you by the SharePoint Operations Guide. For more information, visit www.wssops.com. To provide feedback on this podcast, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.